In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show starts right now. Appreciate everybody getting in here for your college football conversation every single day. 2 hours, it is what we do. And Keith Niebuhr was here in hour one talking Auburn recruiting. And that right now, when you look on the list of the top 10, and a lot of it is in the eye of the beholder. If there's a five-star kid that's ranked number one, especially in a southern state, then, yeah, he's probably going to be a pretty good ball player. But there is nuance to it. And then there's also what I wanted to lead in with. I was like, it's only December 2nd. You can't sign yet, but let's talk leaders and possibilities. And Alabama is at least on December 2nd looking great in state, especially in, like, I'll say the top nine. Basically all of them right now as leaders, except for one kid Texas, one kid Oregon. But there is at least one Alabama commit that Auburn may be able to flip. And then even the kid who's committed to Oregon, there's a story there. So if you didn't hear that, get the podcast. Again, go to thepodcastpark.com. Wherever you get your podcasts, like, subscribe, do all that. You can listen to an interview you may have missed or hear it again. Get everything from Keith Niebuhr from 247 talking Auburn recruiting coming up in about 10 minutes. T-Bob Hebert, LSU football, Brian Kelly with the introductory press conference yesterday. T-Bob, of course, hosts the morning show Monday through Friday on 104.5 ESPN in Baton Rouge in the bottom of the hour. In studio, Westy, that's right, West Coast Report. Steve West coming in, on-air host and personality, WCNN 680 AM in Atlanta. And we'll talk Pac-12 after dark, Mountain West after midnight, all of that with Steve West. But right now, we'll get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football. Every single day, this is CFB 365.
Headline, Adrian Martinez enters transfer portal. Now, this is not a headline you will see very often because I'll read the subheadline. Huskers four-year starting QB to use final year of eligibility elsewhere. Adrian Martinez is a really talented quarterback. His career at Nebraska has ended. He's a four-year starter. He's the only three-time captain in school history. He's like, yeah, I'm going. He's got one season of eligibility left. Got a redshirt at his disposal if he chooses, but got another year of eligibility because while he's played 4 years, it looks like he only played three. So if he wanted to use a red shirt, he could hang out for 2022 and whatever, or play four games and then try something out. But he's a really talented ball player whose numbers and the wins and losses, it never really reflected his ability. And then you know what happens with a talented quarterback when it's kind of chaos around him. They start developing some bad habits, and maybe it'll be, you know, I don't know, it'll be win-win. You don't get better by losing a guy like Adrian Martinez, but I don't know what Nebraska was going to be next year anyway, and at least allow him to pitch to the next quarterback. Yeah, we got an opening. Headline, Irish hire Marcus Freeman. Now, is that official? Have they signed the contract and everything's done?
I don't believe it's official, okay. But I believe it's on the way.
All right, well, I'm looking at a headline from the Associated Press, Irish hire Marcus Freeman. I was like, whoa, wait a minute, AP. So I don't think it's crossed and dotted, but it's going to happen. It's kind of like the sun hadn't come up on Friday. It's going to happen. That's not the story to me. Dan, jump in. I usually don't do this during head. Tommy Reese, did you see his commentary? He would like to stay with the Irish?
Yeah, so he addressed the team and said as much and said, you know, let's go win a national title, all of that. But then he also stopped short and said, I can't answer any questions. Yeah. I just wanted to tell you I'm still going to be here.
Yes, and so Tommy Reese is the hot topic now, and he should be, that basically, you know, Brian Kelly thought he needed to leave to win a national title. How about we win one beginning in about 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks? So Tommy Reese... There you go. Headline, Cristobal Heupel, top OU coaching candidates. The fact that there just aren't any players in Oregon, at some point, and you can recruit there, obviously, dip into California and get great players. But the further east you get and the further south you get, easier it gets. it would be interesting, the career prospects, the opinions of coaching in the SEC that two guys have, that Lincoln Riley is like, yeah, I'm going to the Pac-12. Mario Cristobal is at least considering leaving the Pac-12 to head over there. Heupel's already in the SEC. It's easier to do that at Oklahoma, I think, but you're further away from the really, really good recruits. And he got fired. But no, wait a minute. That was the contract wasn't renewed sort of thing. The contract expired. Yeah, that whatever it is, that's weird. Because you were just here running the – it's like the Ron Zook thing I've talked about. Heupel was there running the offense. They took that away from him, but now they're going to let him run the whole program. It's just strange. Oh, and by the way, did we see the conference commissioners and the playoff executives? No, they still hadn't decided on anything. They thought yesterday would be it, and all we got was, we've decided that we all favor expansion. And Greg Sankey's like, guys, this is Groundhog Day. Greg Sankey, quote, this is Groundhog Day. Y'all get back to me. So is expansion favored, but one of the hangups is guaranteed bids. You know what Greg Sankey wants? No guaranteed bids. He wants 12 at large. Because he's thinking, we might get five of them. There's other stuff. We'll get to it. Consider yourself up to date. We're going to take a break, come back, talk more college football.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Told you, what was it today, Thursday? Told you Tuesday, Virginia Tech's hired Brent Pry, the Penn State DC. Got details on his contract. He's going to make $4 million this year, this much for assistant coaches, $2.25 million for support staff. That's his budget for support staff. That's a rounding error in the SEC. And that's his budget. But the reason I wanted to mention this is Virginia Tech moved on Tuesday. They were like, all right, we keep seeing all these really high-profile jobs get filled, but we don't move up the list. Why? Because we see USC get filled, but then OU is now on the list. LSU gets filled. Notre Dame's on the list. So you got to jump when you got a chance. And so that is how competitive this was. And LSU winds up with Brian Kelly, who I think is the best hire of the offseason. And if you go back about, I don't know, 4 days, people are looking at Scott Wilbur going, whoa, wait a minute, big game hunter. Where is it? He delivered. Want to welcome on right now, a guy we always love catching up with from 104.5 Yonder in Baton Rouge. It is T-Bob Hebert. T-Bob, how are you, brother?
Yo, hey, what's going on, man? What's happening?
Talk to me about your mood maybe when it looked like no Jimbo, no Kelly, no. Who are we going to wind up with? And then all of a sudden it's Brian Kelly. Was it all of a sudden for you, or did you start hearing whispers?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Scott Woodward, I think as we get, like, you know, I don't know how long it takes to get the full story of how this went down. But, like, as we learn, I think you are going to see about as tightly run of a coaching search as you could imagine. I mean, think about it. On the day when Brian Kelly was announced as being the next head coach of LSU, Vegas didn't even have him on. You couldn't even bet on Brian Kelly.
No.
You couldn't even bet on Brian Kelly as being the next. That's how under wraps it was. It's really tough to discern what's true or not right now, but, like, it is very real. Like, it is my belief. I'm not reporting this as facts. I don't know if this is 100% fact. But I think that LSU actually had potentially an offer agreement in place with Kelly, maybe even, like, Friday or Saturday, and you had reportedly, again, you know, I don't know if it's fact or not, but you had a plane full of LSU boosters fly to Norman, Oklahoma to meet with Lincoln with a meeting that never happened on Sunday. So it is really wild just how out of touch some very powerful people were. I'm talking powerful boosters, powerful board members. Nobody knew what was going on here, save for Scott Woodward, Stephanie Ramp, who is his right-hand woman and everything. I mean, you know, they work incredibly in tandem. And then maybe like a couple other people. It was tight.
T-Bob, I am, when it comes to football more than other sports even, I am about leadership and organization and strength at the top and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I don't want you to run a power eye and then a 50 on defense. The X's and O's do matter, but the X's and O's don't really matter to me. Talk about Brian Kelly from the organizational leadership, et cetera, because it's off the charts in every one of those.
Yeah, so that's what I am, that's what I've come around to learning, right? It was kind of interesting where Brian Kelly's announced, and to be honest, the general reaction from LSU fans was a bit underwhelming. People were not beside themselves. And I'm like, that's crazy. How could you hire the guy who is literally, if we're not vacating wins, which I don't really give a damn about vacating wins, I'll still count them. If you still count those vacated wins, he is the winningest active coach in all of college football. How can you hire that guy and the crowd not be over the top? And so, you sort of maybe wonder why. And it's like, okay, because maybe you've seen Notre Dame get, like, smashed in the playoffs, or he's not like some young wunderkind like a Riley or a Kiffin or something like that. But the deeper you get into this resume, the more amazed and excited you become for the reasons that you just named. This is a guy that has won on every level, was dominant at Grand Valley State for over a decade. And again, let's use this CEO and analogy, right? Which LSU fans recoil at a bit because that's what O was said to be. But I love O to death. That is my freaking man. And he did some damn good things at first, followed by some poor decisions that led to where we are now. But O was like a CEO of maybe like an oil company during a boom and everything was going well. And it was hitting, you make the big money and then you kind of lose your way a little bit. Brian Kelly is more like a CEO who started at like a tech startup back in the day, did well there, went to a slightly larger company at Western Michigan, did well there, did another jump up to Cincinnati after that, did very well there. Then he finally got to break through to the Fortune 500 company in Notre Dame, and he quite literally became their most successful CEO ever, just in terms of wins.
Yep.
And what greater commentary could you offer on both the perceived ceiling at Notre Dame and the perceived power of LSU that Brian Kelly just left a Notre Dame situation that he understood better than anyone else? He left that situation at 11-1 with an over 50% chance of making the playoffs according to ESPN's FPI index, and he went to a team that just finished 6-6 and dead last in the SEC West. That's wild, okay? And so that speaks to exactly what everybody was talking about the power of LSU, the people that have won national championships here. And right now it feels like, and look, I saw him do the press conference yesterday, and then there was an old, like, player alumni booster event last night, and I got to watch him work the room, right? And when I tell you that this guy just has kind of an aura about him, just a sense of gravitas. I mean, we've all met these people, right? These kind of boss individuals, where when they step into a room, you can kind of feel reality bending to their will a little bit, and he has that CEO energy. And like between him and then Scott Woodward, they kept using the word alignment yesterday. Their vision of what LSU can be is beyond what even some of the most hardcore fans think LSU can be. And I get now. At first, I saw the contract. I'm like, man, you're all in. Like, you're married for 10 years now, for better, for worse, right? Life and death and all that. I understand now why you commit to this guy for 10 years. It's a level of organization that just has not been at LSU since Nick Saban.
Can you handicap the coaching staff? Because everybody, you want to keep one assistant at least. Everybody, I advocate everybody keeping at least one assistant to kind of walk you through things. But can you handicap the current staff and anybody who you expect to stay?
Well, okay, so they announced one of the behind-the-scenes guys in Jack Marucci. But that's not going to excite me.
Like
a director of player innovation, former longtime trainer. I actually made Marucci bats, which ended up taking over the MLB. It's very funny, a little odd story. But they're going to give him – this is not official, but it definitely sounds like Corey Raymond, the DB coach, who is the godfather of DBU,
yep,
that he will be staying – There's some whispers that Kevin Falk could be staying, which, if you're Brian Kelly and you need inroads into Louisiana, Kevin Falk is the god here. He is the man, like, single-handedly credited with showing great Louisiana recruits that it's cool to stay in Louisiana and LSU, so, like, you can't do better than Kevin Falk. And then after that, it's tough, man. There's guys that did really good jobs. The linebacker coach, Blake Baker, did incredible with this linebacker crew this year, but I don't know if, you know, how many are you going to keep? Because also, the O-line coach, Brad Davis, ended up doing a damn good job. This is an LSU offensive line that was awful at the beginning and got better consistently through the year. And reported the players on him. He's from Baton Rouge. Scott Woodward loves him. He got named as interim head coach. And then you've got some big-time recruits, like the big five-star tackle out of North Louisiana, Will Campbell, who's been, like, actively campaigning out there being like, I really hope LSU keeps Brad Davis. So I think really confident Corey will for sure get held on. Fairly confident on Falk. Confident to hopeful on Davis. And then after that, I just don't know.
Well, T-Bob, appreciate your time, brother. It is a good time to be in Baton Rouge. Plenty to talk about it. Thanks for coming on today.
All right, boys. Y'all have a great day.
T-Bob Hebert again. Morning drive out yonder. He and Jacob Hester, right? Yeah. And talking right now, talking LSU every single day as Brian Kelly is in town. And that is and it's an important facet of this story that, you know, and I've talked about this with the Sean Elliott when he was the one assistant. I think it was Sean Elliott that was retained by Muschamp the first year at South Carolina, because you need somebody to kind of walk you through things, walk you through the roster, walk you through the administration, walk you through the processes of, hey, it says I'm supposed to ask Steve about this requisition. Do not go to Steve's office. Go ask Dan. Okay. And if you really want it, go ask Julie. Julie gets stuff done. That you need somebody. There are about five assistants that it would make sense for Brian Kelly to keep. Well, is it a new day? Is it morning in Baton Rouge? If it's like half the previous staff? It's, you know, I've always said boss is the boss. And you got to set the tone. You got to be in charge. It's more than just the X's and O's. It's the message and the tone and then the X's and O's. And you need a lot of that to change. And when only half the staff changes, it's hard to enact that much. So, like I said, he'll figure it out. Brian Kelly, I mean, he's successful. He knows what he's doing. But there are at least four, maybe five assistants that I would look at and go, oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense to keep him on.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
If you look on Twitter, you will see him as Steve West ATL. If you listen to WCNN 680 AM in Atlanta, you'll hear him talk there and various places. And just a real, real good friend of mine and the program and a guy who knows a heck of a lot about college and pro football. And we always like to get our West Coast report and bigger than that from him. And in studio on this Thursday, again, it's my good friend Steve West. How you doing, man?
I'm great, Chuck. Happy holidays to you. Guys behind the glass, great to be back. Great to be here. Hope everything's well.
It is. Appreciate you making some time. And let's get into this because we got two fronts. We got coaching changes to talk about, but then also a look ahead to conference title games beginning tomorrow night. First of all, coaching changes, Lincoln Riley. This is a very like fan chest out way to say it, but he runs from the SEC. Brian Kelly runs to the SEC. Give me your download.
Well, obviously Lincoln Riley is a home run hire if you're a Southern California alum or fan. Formally introduced as the 30th head football coach on Monday out there in L.A., but he's the seventh head coach for USC since 2001. I think going back to Paul Hackett, then you had, obviously,
Pete Carroll,
Starkeesian, Kiffin. Coach O was out there on an interim basis. Most recently, obviously, the Clay Helton was there with 7 years.
I was about to say, 7 years. People don't realize how long Clay Helton was head coach at USC.
Yeah, and another interim here recently. Four Oklahoma staffers are going to be joining him in Los Angeles. The defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch, wide receivers coach, Dennis Simmons, director of football ops, Clark Stroud, and director of sports performance, Benny Wiley. So that's what we know thus far as who's coming from Norman out to L.A. Riley, 55-10 in 5 years at Oklahoma, three college football playoff berths, four Big 12 titles. And, Chuck, I think there is a shortage of elite coaches right now, or at least coaches who are viewed as elite by the schools, their fan bases, and certainly those of us in the media. So that's the reason why I say this is a home run hire for USC, is because Riley is viewed as one of those elite guys.
You are absolutely right. And the fact that we are in an environment where Mel Tucker gets the same contract Brian Kelly gets, okay, that tells me, well, if I get Lincoln Riley for that same deal, then I probably did pretty well. Let's talk Brian Kelly to LSU. You talk about running to the fire. Brian Kelly, I saw something. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. I don't know if you saw Dan Wolken, his comments that Brian Kelly isn't interested in championships. That's why he took the money. And I'm like, no, it's the exact opposite. He realizes I ain't going to win one at Notre Dame. I can at LSU. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I we were talking about this on one of the shows the other day. As a matter of fact, with the Georgia Tech AD, about what is the ACC exactly getting out of this arrangement with Notre Dame? With the win over Georgia Tech a couple of weeks ago, since 2017, Notre Dame is 28-1 in these football games that they play against selected ACC members. And obviously Stansbury told me, well, the goal, the dream situation would be to have Notre Dame in for all sports. But to your point, I think had Notre Dame had that permanent league affiliation, maybe they're in a better position as champs of the ACC or the Big Ten, whatever, to play for a national championship, to get into that playoff position. But as an independent, maybe not so much here. Not only is Kelly leaving Notre Dame for LSU, he's leaving Notre Dame as the winningest all-time coach at Notre Dame. That includes Lou Holtz, that includes Ara Parseghian, that includes any of the legends from the past, Newt Rodney, et cetera. So obviously, you look at the situation this year with Notre Dame, they dropped down to number six in the latest poll here. It doesn't appear that they've got a path ahead of them, barring some catastrophic turn of events over the weekend here. So never a good time to say goodbye to your players. And you can say what you want about the manner in which it was done. There's never an easy way to leave. But I'm very intrigued about the possibilities of Brian Kelly at LSU.
Folks, if you want to tweet him, it's Steve West ATL, and you can tweet him about Tennessee football, South Carolina football, Clemson, Wake Forest, whatever. But also, when you get a little further west than, say, North Texas and Denton, and we'll talk about that in a second. Also, you had a trip to Birmingham that I really want to hear about in just a second.
Yes.
But let's go as far west as we can. Both members, both participants in the Apple Cup, UW and Wazoo, got new head coaches. Just real quick, bird's eye about that those situations.
Well, Jake Dickert, obviously the interim tag removed there at Washington State. He led the Cougars to a 3-2 record following the dismissal of Nick Rolovich. And believe it or not, had Oregon lost to Oregon State on Saturday, based on the second tiebreaker, which is record within the Pac-12 North, Washington State will be playing tonight in Las Vegas for a Pac-12 championship. The 40-13 rout of arch rival Washington in the Apple Cup game snapped a seven-game losing streak to the Huskies that goes back to the early days of Mike Leach. Furthermore, the margin of victory was the greatest by Washington State over Washington in a long history of that program. I think the key thing for, obviously, for Dickert right now is to assemble a staff. Because remember, it wasn't just Nick Rolovich that was let go for refusal to comply with the vaccination mandate. It was four of his assistants. So they worked with a patchwork staff there at the end of the season. And the reason that Mike Leach was able to take Washington State to five straight bowl games and six in 7 years is because he assembled an excellent staff out there. So that's the number one goal right now for Dickert, is to assemble a quality staff out there on the Palouse.
And we know this, that like a Cougars fan or administrator or coach would yell at me right now, but there are different goals at Seattle, at UW than there are at Wazoo. And Washington is supposed to be a player, at least in conversation at the national level, in my opinion, and they're just not right now.
And that brings us to the hiring of Kalen DeBoer, who comes over from Fresno State. He's a South Dakota native, played at the University of Sioux Falls. In fact, he later coached there won three NAIA championships.
And lose.
Yep, 2006, and then back-to-back in 08 and 09. OC at Southern Illinois, Eastern Washington, Fresno State under Jeff Tedford, 1 year at Indiana, and then he returns to Fresno State as the head coach for 2020 and 2021. 12-6. In two seasons there in the San Joaquin Valley, including 9-3 this past season. Fresno led the Mountain West in yards per play at 6.34 yards per game, 463.6, second in scoring, and 33.6. But here's the interesting thing, Chuck. This could amount to a package deal for Washington because, remember now, Jake Haener has just entered the transfer portal. Haener started out in Washington after leaving high school there in 2017. His mother and grandfather are Washington grads. He starts his collegiate career at Washington, could be headed to Seattle, 66.5% completion rate, 5,800 yards, 52 touchdowns, 14 interceptions in two seasons at Fresno. And remember, Haener and the former five-star recruit and Georgia transfer Jacob Eason battled for the starting quarterback job throughout the spring and summer of 2019. When the job went to Eason, Haener respectfully bowed out and transferred to Fresno State.
And when you see the former head coach go somewhere, when Bobo left Colorado State and Colin Hill followed him, I was like, hey, guess what, Jake Bentley? Let me go ahead and tell you who the starter is going to be. Helinski as well. So you can kind of get some insight there. Let's talk quickly. Let's get to some conference championship games. The first one Friday night, Oregon and Utah playing in Vegas at the new crib out there. I wouldn't surprise me at all if Utah beat them again.
Well, the Ducks, as you know, Chuck, had a well-defined path to the college football playoff. They were ranked number three in the country heading into that game two weeks ago. The loss was the worst of the Mario Cristobal era at Oregon. And now 2 weeks later, the Ducks have a chance to make amends, obviously, and bring home their third consecutive Pac-12 title. The coaches have downplayed the pros and cons of the rematch, but the Oregon players clearly are using this for fuel, and they got embarrassed, quite frankly, 2 weeks ago at Salt Lake City. What was so out of character for Oregon in this game was their inability to run the football or stop the run. Yeah. In 12 games this season, the Ducks averaged 213 yards on the ground. Against Utah, 63 yards. As for the Oregon defense, pretty good at stopping or at least limiting the run, 25th in FBS against the run this year, allowing just 124 yards per game. Utah runs for 208 yards and four rushing touchdowns.
Do people who don't watch the Utes, like, ever or regularly, like, they're one of the most rugged, physical, in-your-face mass teams in all of college football.
Yeah, that's the legacy of the Kyle Whittingham era, obviously. And you know that they're going to bring it every time, this Utah club representing the Pac-12 South here.
All right, let's talk Big 12 championship, because this is not going to be a typical game in 2021. It's going to be, hey, let's try to be a conference champion and make it to the playoffs on defense for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, crazy. Obviously, this is a situation where, you know, I kind of saw this early, Oklahoma State having a path, having a chance to get into this play, even after the loss to Iowa State, which came down to a fourth down spot at the end of this game. Not the typical defense that we've seen this season from Oregon or from Oklahoma State in the first half on Saturday night there, as Oklahoma was able to move it up and down the field. But in the second half, that Cowboy defense pitched a shutout. They got a freshman kid with 8.5 sacks there that ended the game. They had a 100-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. That's what they ran the football successfully, and that's the recipe for Oklahoma State this season: defense, special teams, run the football, and they were able to do all three of those things in the second half. I believe it breaks down to, as far as defensive statistics, number three in the nation going into last weekend in total defense, number two in the nation in scoring defense behind Georgia, and number one in the nation in third down defense. That's been the big difference for Mike Gundy and this Oklahoma club, or state club, this season.
Yeah, they absolutely can win. There's no doubt about it. And if Cincinnati gets in, the committee may say, oh, let's put them at number three. So they may actually get a pass on playing Georgia. Quickly, not far from Arlington, Denton, Texas. You think people understand, first of all, it may have one of the best music schools of any university in America. It is known as one of the biggest party schools in America, and they were blessed with a Steve West sighting?
Yes, I was out there in September. Unfortunately, that was in the midst of the 1-6 start. Yeah. They got taken to the woodshed there by
nice crib out there.
UAB. Beautiful stadium, Apogee Stadium, 10 years old, right there between the 35E and 35W split. You walk over a bridge from campus to see the games. Great experience, great crowd, and of course they rally down the stretch here to win the last five games and get bowl eligible and of course knock off UTSA, which was in the midst of an 11-0 start and looking for a dream season here. Those two schools are rivals, so North Texas getting over and now they're waiting for their bowl bid.
And you had a more recent trip across the state line over to Birmingham. The UAB athletic director, I was like, guy's off his rocker. He thinks he's going to get a brand new stadium for that program. He not only has a brand new stadium, which I want to hear about, but he also has plans. There is a Komodo dragon at the Birmingham Zoo that he wants to get on the sidelines. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say that's a really bad idea to have a live. But other than the Komodo dragon, what was the experience like?
Well, the last time I was there was right before the pandemic. They had completed the excavation and concrete was ready to be poured. So now I had a couple of chances, dates earlier that I wasn't able to get out there. One final chance against UTEP last Saturday. It's right down there by Legacy Arena, the BJCC in Uptown Birmingham, and a great, great addition to the scene there. Yeah. About 47,000 seats, state-of-the-art, huge video board, plazas behind both end zones. Just a great scene there, great situation, and it's going to be really good going forward for this UAB program. There's a Top Golf right across the street, so that part of town has really been revitalized by the new protective stadium.
I'm guessing that there's a credit card receipt at Top Golf from your visit over there.
Yes, there's several credit card receipts throughout
hashtag pitchers.
Uptown Birmingham and Southside Birmingham, I might add.
As a guy who did UAB games at Legion Field, did you ever attend a game in Legion Field?
You're a Southern boy. I went to several Tennessee-Alabama games at Legion Field going back to 1981.
I talked about that, you know, everybody knows the Iron Bowl was there. I was like, folks, it was every big Bama game, LSU, Georgia, Tennessee. It was always the turf at Legion Field. And UAB, they were the last man standing there. I mean, it was that old, like, worn-out gray turf, and they lopped off the visitor side.
Yes.
And I was like, when they canceled the program, I was like, well, it seems like they had canceled it a couple of years earlier. It is so awesome to see where it is now.
Well, and they may yet be another chapter. There may yet be another chapter for the old gray lady on Graymont, because now the United States Football League is going to launch in the spring of 22 with all of the games being played in Birmingham. And my understanding is they're going to split those games between the new protective stadium in Uptown and Legion Field there down on Graymont.
There you go, Steve West, my man. I appreciate you coming in, brother.
Always a pleasure, Chuck. Happy holidays.
Same to you. We're going to take a break, come back, wrap up on a Thursday next.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
We have work to do this year. We got a lot ahead of us. And for the guys that are coming back, let's go win a national championship here at Notre Dame. Everybody good?
Sure.
I can't answer any questions or else I would. All right, guys? But I love you guys. This is where I want to be. And let's go win it all. Cool?
That's Tommy Reese speaking, and I can't swear to you what he was saying. Now, there's part of it that got, we had to alter the video. But when you say, let's go win a blanking national championship, there's supposed to be some emotion, and you're supposed to, like, pump a fist, and it's not supposed to be like you're reading from a note card. It sounded like, you know, introducing a draft pick in the second round.
You've been around football long enough to know that every single coach kind of has their own persona. But I've always noticed that quarterback coaches and OCs are usually pretty even keel. Now, if he was a defensive line coach like Bill Kolar, if you don't know Bill Kolar, go look him up. But a little bit of a different tone right there.
Oh, yeah. Coach O, do you remember the Tennessee Wild Boys story? Where it was that when he was his 1 year at Tennessee, the defense, as Eric Berry was there too, but they decided they were the Tennessee Wild Boys. And there were stories about Coach Ogeron ripping his shirt off and chest bumping people in the locker room. And I don't think that they were stories. I think that they were reels. But that's Tommy Reese, and he was talking to the Notre Dame players about staying, and so I assume that we'll see something that's crossed and dotted at some point. Appreciate Steve West coming in today in studio again. And sometimes we keep him for both segments. Today we just kind of went long on that one, and it was just really good information, so much to bounce around with. So we do that on some Thursdays. Dan Matthews will be popping in just a minute. But right now I want to tell you that Bama has achieved just about everything they can as a program. And multiple times over, whether it's national championships or Heismans or everything else. There is something that the Alabama program has never done, at least in modern-day football. And when I say modern-day football, let's go like 1960. And a lot of folks want to say, you know, 1970, the merger, the AFL-NFL merger. But as far as pro football, there is something Bama has never achieved, not in modern days. You know, Alabama's never had a player go first overall in the NFL draft. And Will Anderson may. A pass rusher good enough to go first overall. That's what I call a game wrecker. And if that is the case, if that's who Will Anderson is, he's good enough to wreck one game this weekend, even against that opponent. The 19-year-old from South Atlanta at his best, that's Bama's best shot this weekend. So what Bama may achieve for the first time ever, and it's not in this coming draft, we realize Will Anderson can't go in the draft this year. He's only a second-year player. He and Bryce Young came in together. So I guess they're both listed as redshirt freshmen. What Bama can achieve a year and a half from now, April of 23, it may help them win this Saturday afternoon. Because that level of play, like Jadeveon Clowney, when you have a pass rusher good enough to go first overall, that means against any opponent he can have that game. Because an NFL team may draft him to have that game 4 or 5 weeks a year against NFL linemen. Best shot is that Will Anderson actually is that game wrecker, and it happens this Saturday. Now, I say modern football. Harry Gilmer was the first overall. Do you know the draft started, I think, in 36? And in 1946, Harry Gilmer went first overall. He was an Alabama player. But it was 1946, and he was known for the jump pass. That means it's not relevant to anything today. Do you know what the jump pass was? It's not that thing like we saw with Tebow, or a couple of weeks back, I saw it on a fake punt. Who did that? The punter.
Arkansas.
Thank you, Dan. Get Bama. And that's not the jump pass. I'm talking about where he was a halfback. Snap it, give it to him. He would be running and leaping. And it's like if you see any of those old school, like black and white photos of a quarterback from the 40s and 50s, they're usually in the air. Because there was this thing called the jump pass. You would jump up and just fling it. I'm not making that up. That was a passing technique, which means it's not relevant today. So that was 1946. Bama's never had a player go first overall after 1946. That's Will Anderson. And that means Bama does have a chance. What up, Dan?
That almost kind of sounds like when Mark Ingram won the Heisman Trophy. They said the first winner from Alabama, and everybody started looking around. Uh-huh. And they were like, no way, that's impossible. Somebody got their information wrong, and then you go look it up, and you're like, wow, that is true. Lane Kiffin, you know, last week, I actually have to go back on something I said. If I'm Lane now, I don't leave. Because there is pretty much the only one, I guess we'll have to see what happens with Miami, and I know a lot of people connect him with Miami, but at least the last reports that I saw, it seems like Miami's going to keep their guy. But I think that if nothing else for Lane, the benefit in staying is for him to say, yeah, I'll lose Matt Corral, I'll lose Jerrion Ealy, I'll lose a lot of these really good players. I can get more. And I can show you that I can get more, and I can show you that this is sustainable. I think in a way, Chuck, this could be a way for him to have his Power 5 version of FAU, because remember the first year at FAU, conference champions, really good season, crushed whoever they played in the bowl game, and people thought, Lane might be able to do this thing the second time around if we pay enough attention. I think for him, he's going to look at the crop of transfer quarterbacks that are out there. Now, granted, what I said earlier, too, about the transfer quarterbacks, you can't just count on that. I think he also wants to prove enough, because every coach has an ego. I can get Arch Manning here. I can win with Arch Manning here, and I can be able to make Ole Miss into a program that people, a lot of people went out there and tried to tell me, yeah, you can't do that. But who knows? Maybe Lane is cocky enough to say, yeah, I can do it.
Man, good stuff today. David, appreciate you. Everybody listening, 22 hours. I'll recharge the batteries, and I promise I will be back here tomorrow with more college football conversation right here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Full preview tomorrow, Bama and Georgia. Dan, is that right? All the guests? Wall-to-wall coverage tomorrow. Wall-to-wall. And Pitt Wake Forest. Some. Tomorrow on the Chuck Oliver Show.